VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
On today's program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn and Gregory Stockel. Later, John Russell presents this week's Everyday Grammar Report. We close the show with the next part of our U.S. history series. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
An organization is using human genetic material to learn about the African roots of 36 American slaves who lived in the late 1700s. The 36 bodies were discovered in 2013 during a construction project in Charleston, South Carolina. The DNA material was collected from the remains. DNA is a group of molecules that hold the genetic information necessary for life. Leaders of the project say no written records have been found for any of the individuals. Their names are unknown, and any information about their lives was lost. But now their stories are being pieced together through things that were left behind, such as bones, teeth, and DNA. DNA research has developed over the years to permit scientists to use ancient remains and to learn about long-dead people. In Charleston, that meant searching for African roots that were cut off by slavery. "We're bringing their memory back to life," said Raquel Flexus. She is an anthropologist at the University of Connecticut who studied the remains. Flexus added that she considers the project a way to bring back dignity to individuals that should have always had this dignity. The Charleston Project started 10 years ago. It began after workers discovered the remains during a large building project. Experts believe the remains belonged to enslaved people of African background who lived nearby. The remains are estimated to date back more than 200 years. The city reburied the remains near where they were found, and a memorial is planned to honor the individuals. But with little information known about the people, community members decided to use science to learn more about them. The effort turned into the Anson Street African Burial Ground Project. Things found at the building site suggested the bodies were buried with care, said Theodore Shure. He is an anthropologist at the University of Pennsylvania who has worked on the project. Shure said minerals in the teeth showed that only a few had been born in Africa. Most had likely been born into slavery in Charleston or nearby. The researchers also collected DNA from the bones. They were able to get some genetic material from most of the 36 and full genomes for half of them. The material was compared with the genetic material of people in Africa today. Results showed the group had ties to many places along the West African coast, from Gambia to Gabon. The individuals were mostly male, and most died as adults. The youngest was a child under 3 years of age, and the oldest was a man over 50. Their DNA showed they were not related except for a possible mother and child. I'm Brian Lynn.
High school students and those who help in their education in Cyprus have developed an unusual robot. The robot uses ChatGPT artificial intelligence, or AI, technology. ChatGPT is a system developed by U.S. company OpenAI and backed by the technology company Microsoft. The aim of the students is to use the technology to improve learning experiences in the classroom. ChatGPT is an AI system that can have a discussion and create written work. It can create material based on what it has learned from a large database of digital books, online writings, and other media. The robot is named AI-Einstein. Three Pascal schools in Cyprus built AI-Einstein. It is the size of a small adult. The robot even has a screen for a face that appears to show human facial expressions. It speaks a North American form of English, and it can tell jokes like, "Why was the math book sad?" Because it had too many problems. It attempts to speak Greek, and it even tries to talk about physicist Albert Einstein's theory of relativity in class. The robot does not have a favorite movie, saying it was before his time. But it enjoys reading science books and spending time playing the violin, an instrument. Student Richard Erkov is 16. He is the lead programmer of the AI Brain. He said artificial intelligence is set to improve a lot. Erkov told Reuters, "It might help in a lot of spheres of life, such as education and medicine." Another student, 15-year-old Vladimir Baranov, said the technology was incredible. "It mimics human thinking, answers like humans, responds like humans. It is not yet very polished, but it is getting there," he said. Tutors are teachers who work with one student. The tutors who helped with the project said the greater purpose of AI-Einstein is to include it in teaching. Tutor Elpidophoros Anastasiou is the project's leader. He said that students can ask it questions, it can answer back, and the robot can even help teachers teach more effectively. I'm Gregory Stockel.
In a recent Everyday Grammar report, we explored how to describe your living space. We asked our readers and listeners to write us a message about their living space. In today's report, we will give feedback on a message sent to us from a VOA Learning English fan in China. Let's start with part of what Jan wrote to us.
I bought an apartment 10 years ago in Shanghai, as I worked for 2 years. The apartment has 3 bedrooms, 3 bathrooms, 1 living room, a kitchen, and 2 balconies.
Jan wrote a nice description of the living space. The second sentence, the one describing the rooms of the house, does not need any changes at all. That said, we can offer some suggestions to make the first sentence clearer. We can also learn about some important ideas that can be used in many situations. The first sentence says,
I bought an apartment 10 years ago in Shanghai, as I worked for 2 years.
We recommend changing a apartment to an apartment. Let's explore why. The articles a and an both act as determiners. In other words, they tell us something about the quality of the noun they come before. A and an both suggest that the noun is general rather than specific. The difference between a and an relates to speaking. We generally use a before nouns that start with a consonant sound. We generally use an before nouns that start with a vowel sound. Since apartment starts with a vowel sound, we say an apartment. Now let's examine our updated sentence.
I bought an apartment 10 years ago in Shanghai as I worked for 2 years.
Let us take note of the verbs in the sentence. We have I bought and I worked. Both verbs are in the simple past. Now let's count the number of time periods mentioned. We have 10 years ago and for 2 years. We recommend simplifying the sentence by reducing the number of time periods mentioned. We could remove the part that says,
as I worked for 2 years.
This part of the sentence is meant to explain how Jan got the apartment. But Jan made the money before buying the apartment. In other words, we have actions happening before other actions in the past. So instead of using more complex language to explain the order of events, we can instead go in a different direction. We can take out some information from the sentence. Here is one way we could change the sentence.
I worked for 2 years and then bought an apartment in Shanghai.
Here is another possibility.
I bought my apartment in Shanghai 10 years ago.
Another possibility is to name the year the apartment was purchased. For example, you might write,
in 2013, I bought an apartment in Shanghai.
The central idea is to reduce the number of time periods mentioned per sentence. When we reduce the number of time periods mentioned per sentence, we can increase clarity. So, here is part of Jan's message that has been updated with our recommendations.
I bought my apartment in Shanghai 10 years ago. The apartment has 3 bedrooms, 3 bathrooms, 1 living room, a kitchen, and 2 balconies.
One more thing. In general writing, we spell out the numbers 1 through 9, and we use figures for numbers 10 and higher. We can learn some important lessons from today's feedback. First, it is important to pay attention to articles and how they are used. Using a in place of an will not cause a major misunderstanding in everyday situations. But it could make a small difference to your score on a writing or speaking test. Second, it is important to keep note of how much information you include in your sentence. By limiting the amount of information per sentence, you can increase the clarity of your writing. I'm John Russell.
And that was this week's Everyday Grammar Report with John Russell. John joins me now to talk a little bit more about the story. Hi, John. Welcome back.
Hi, Ashley. Thanks for having me on the show.
In the report, you mentioned that we generally use A before nouns that start with a consonant sound. We also use an before nouns that start with a vowel sound. Why is that?
One way to think about the question is by doing a kind of test. Take a noun that starts with a consonant sound. Then practice saying a tree and an tree. Which one is easier to say?
A tree is much easier for me to say. The other choice, an tree, is harder to say because of the consonant sounds being right next to each other. The n in an and the tr in tree.
That's right. And remember, in speaking, we often try to shorten words or find the easier ways to express our meaning. That is why we use a before nouns that start with consonant sounds. It's just easier for us to say.
Thanks for that explanation, John, and thank you again for coming on the show today.
You're welcome. See you next time.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. The election of Herbert Hoover in 1928 made Americans more hopeful than ever about their future. Hoover seemed to have just the right experience to lead the nation to more economic progress. He was an engineer and businessman who had served in the government as Commerce Secretary. He understood economics and had faith in the future of private business. On a rainy day in March of 1929, Hoover rode down Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington to become the new president. "I have no fears for the future of our country," he told the cheering crowd. "It is bright with hope." Faith Lapidus and Bob Doty tell more about the Republican administration of Herbert Hoover.
The clearest evidence of the public's faith in the economy is the stock market. And the New York Stock Exchange reacted to the new president with a wild increase in prices. During the months after Hoover's election, prices generally rose like a rocket. Stocks valued at $100 climbed to $200, then $300, $400. Men and women made huge amounts of money overnight. Publications and economic experts advised Americans to buy stocks before prices went even higher. Time and again, people heard how rich they could become if they found and bought stocks for companies growing into industrial giants. "Never sell the United States short," said one publication. Another just said, "Everybody ought to be rich."
A number of economic experts worried about the sharp increase in stock prices that followed Hoover's election. The president himself urged stock market officials to make trading more honest and safe. And he approved a move by the Federal Reserve Board to increase the interest charged to banks. However, both efforts failed to stop the growing number of Americans who were spending their money wildly on stocks. Some experts pointed to danger signs in the economy during the summer of 1929. The number of houses being built was dropping. Industries were reducing the amount of products that they held in their factories. The rate of growth in spending by average Americans was falling sharply. And industrial production, employment, and prices were down. These experts warned that the American economy was just not strong enough to support such rapid growth in stock prices. They said there was no real value behind many of the high prices. They said a stock price could not increase 4 times while a company's sales stayed the same. They said the high prices were built on foolish dreams of wealth, not real value.
But the prices went still higher. Buyers fought with each other to pay more and more for company stocks. The average price of all stocks almost doubled in just 1 year. It seemed everybody was buying stocks, even people with little money or economic training. A clothing salesman got advice from a stock trader visiting his store and made $200,000. A nurse learned of a good company from someone in the hospital. She made $30,000. There were thousands of such stories. By early September, the stock market reached its high point of the past 18 months. Shares of the Westinghouse Company had climbed from $91 to $313. The Anaconda Copper Company had risen from $54 to $162. Union Carbide jumped from $145 to $413. Life was like a dream, but like any dream, it could not last forever.
In September 1929, stock prices stopped rising. During the next month and a half, stock prices fell, but only slowly. Then, suddenly, at the end of October, the market crashed. Prices dropped wildly. Leading stocks fell $5, $10, $20 in a single day. Everyone tried to sell their stocks, but no one was buying. Fear washed across the stock market. People were losing money even faster than they had made it.
The stock market collapsed on Thursday, October 24th, 1929. People remember the day as Black Thursday, the day the dreams ended. The day began with a wave of selling. People from across the country sent messages to their stock traders in New York. All the messages said the same thing. Sell! Sell the stocks at any price possible! But no one was buying, and so down the prices came. The value of stock for the Montgomery Ward store dropped from $83 to $50 in a single day. The RCA Radio Corporation fell from $68 to $44, down $24 in just a few hours. Down the stocks fell, lower and lower. Several of the country's leading bankers met to discuss ways to stop the disaster. They agreed to buy stocks in large amounts to stop the wave of selling. The bankers moved quickly, and for 2 days, prices held steady. But then, like snow falling down the side of a mountain, the stocks dropped again. Prices went to amazingly low levels. One business newspaper said simply, "The present week has witnessed the greatest stock market disaster of all time."
The stock market crash ruined thousands of Americans. In a few short weeks, traders lost $30 billion, an amount almost as great as all the money the United States had spent in World War I. Some businessmen could not accept what had happened. They jumped from the tops of buildings and killed themselves. In fact, one popular joke of the time said that hotel owners had to ask people if they wanted rooms for sleeping or jumping. But the stock market crash was nothing to laugh about. It destroyed much of the money that Americans had saved. Even worse, it caused millions of people to worry and lose faith in the economy. They were not sure what to expect tomorrow. Business owners would not spend money for new factories or business operations. Instead, they decided to wait and see what would happen. This reduced production and caused more workers to lose their jobs. Fewer workers meant fewer people with money to buy goods. And fewer people buying goods meant less need for factories to produce. So it went. In short, economic disaster.
Why did the stock market crash? One reason, people had been paying too much for stocks. Everyone believed that prices would go higher and higher forever. People paid more for stocks than the stocks were worth. They hoped to sell the stocks at even higher prices. It was like a children's balloon that expands with air, blowing bigger and bigger until it bursts. But there were other important reasons. Industrial profits were too high and wages too low. 5% of the population owned one-third of all personal income. The average worker simply did not have enough money to buy enough of all the new goods that factories were producing. Another problem was that companies were not investing enough money in new factories and supplies. There were also problems with the rules of the stock market itself. People were allowed to buy stocks when they did not have the money to do so.
Several government economic policies also helped cause the stock market crash of 1929. Government tax policies made the rich richer and the poor poorer. And the government did little to control the national money supply, even when the economy faced disaster. The stock market crash marked the beginning of the Great Depression, a long, slow, painful fall to the worst economic crisis in American history. The Depression would bring suffering to millions of people. It would cause major political changes, and it would be a major force in creating the conditions that led to World War II.
And that's our program for today.
Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.